The following is a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. Hollywood, redefined. From Los Angeles, California, streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is Black Hollywood Live, the Black Tea Party, featuring weekly discussions on political news and current affairs. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood, redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host of Black Hollywood Live, the Black Tea Party.
Well, well, we're here. And that's the jam. That's the good music. I kind of need that music before we talk about the kind of things we're going to talk about today.
A lot of serious topics. It's good to ease us into it.
Right into it. Wow. I'm Don Nash. I'm your host today, and you are watching the Black Tea Party on Black Hollywood Live. I am not here by myself because we're doing this. This is double trouble today. You've got myself along with Julian Dujarric.
Yes.
See, I said that right.
You
I
did. Saw you. You didn't even flinch. No, I didn't. You didn't hesitate or anything. Yes. You can find me at Julian Dujarric on Twitter and Instagram. And Don, where can the people find you?
Find me on the same spot. Don's Daily Dose on Twitter, Instagram, Mr. Don Nash, and Facebook, Don Nash. And while we're here live, just feel like send us something. We'll talk with you because we're definitely going to be talking about some good stuff today. It's been a big political week. We've had the GOP debate.
Yes.
There's been a lot of stuff going around about that debate because Mr. Trump opted to not take part in that debate.
Right.
And it's been kind of like an interesting, I don't know where this thing is going. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it's going. I don't know if America knows where it's going, but it's been interesting. And I think it's unfolding minute by minute all the way up until us going live. I'm trying to find out, has something else happened different that I need to know about? So what are your thoughts about this week?
This week was great to see the ideas kind of come forward in a way that's not as combative as it has been in the past. That's kind of the argument that a lot of people are saying about the debate. But it's interesting the ratings didn't go down in spite of Trump not being there. I don't know if you know the fact that he was there in spirit because they kept mentioning him had anything to do with that, or the fact that people watch Fox News. There are a lot of people that watch Fox News and watch those debates, so I don't know.
I wonder whether or not people, whether or not America, or whether or not the Trump supporters are real Trump supporters. Yeah. I hear all these polls, but I've never really been one to believe in the polls because I don't know who you're sampling. Mm-hmm. You haven't talked to me, right? And so I haven't got a chance to tell you where I land on this thing or don't land. So who are you really talking to? Are they really out there? And I know that there's much talk about Trump reaching that demographic of Republican voter that maybe hasn't voted before.
Right.
Much like paralleling that to Obama, who reached out to Democrats back in 2008 that really hadn't voted before. But now the challenge is, will he get those voters to the polls? Does that make sense?
Right.
So I'm wondering whether or not the numbers from the debate didn't drop, because those are more solid numbers in terms of people of the Republican Party who's actually watching this conversation, taking a part in it.
Well, it's all. I think it's all speculative at this point.
Yeah,
I think we will know a lot more come Monday, the caucuses, which is, I mean, the reason why they were in Iowa is to make their case. I think I don't want to underestimate anyone or anyone's campaign or their supporters, because I think there is a segment of the population that really does identify with the message that Donald Trump is perpetuating and will support him and will back him. I can't predict the future, but I don't want to say, you know, this is just a fluke, because you just don't know. November's not really right around the corner. There's a long time until then, and there have been things that have changed just within the last few months that. Have put a big question mark on this entire run, this entire race, from on the both the left and the right, I feel like.
Right.
So
watching the debate without Donald Trump, what did you think? I wonder whether or not America would get a chance to really hear the substance of the conversations that were out there. And I personally thought I did hear some things that I wasn't able to hear before because of all of the rhetoric and all the dramatics around it. So I wondered if his absence really allowed the GOP to really be heard.
Well, that's certainly an argument. I mean, there's Donald Trump works as someone who, in the media, so he's someone who, you know, gets his popularity from being controversial, right? From saying these things that push the envelope. And, you know, you did see some of that going back and forth. I mean, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz had their little thing. And, like, they all have their thing, but it was a little more policy-oriented. It was within the context of policy. And I think that is what people are noticing now. And, again, the numbers didn't really go down. I don't have the exact numbers, but I read that they actually have sustained. So, yeah, I don't know that it made that much of a difference. I think Trump's people even predicted.
Well, Trump has changed the conversation, would you say? I mean, these guys, I mean, there's always a point in the election process and in the campaigning where you just bring out the knives, right? And it's time to jab them, right? But Trump.
Is that another Freudian
Chump? Trump, I don't know. But, Trump has seemed to have put a little edge, a little salt in the conversation. And I noticed that the whole thing between Rubio and Cruz, it was a little bitter. There was a little feistiness in there. And poor Cruz, I felt sorry for him. I mean, I felt sorry for him in the conversation. At one point when he looks at the moderator, he says, well, the last several questions have been, how can you attack Cruz? How can you attack Cruz? How can you attack Cruz? And it just went, you know, that way. And I kind of agreed with him.
Did you? Okay.
I thought that, yeah, I agree that the line of questions were set up to look at him, you know, and say, what do you think about his position? What do you think about what he said? What do you think about his change here or there? And I think it did open that up. And when opening it up, I thought they came for him, like they went for his jugular vein. So it was a rough night for Cruz, I thought.
Well, when you're put in that position, when you're asked that type of question, your response is in accordance to that line of questioning, right? And
absolutely.
So I totally understand that. I'm wondering, what would you have asked? Because I have some questions, but I'm just wondering. Yeah, I have some questions for all of the candidates. And I kind of wanted to talk about the GOP debate in a way that, you know, would also kind of elicit some questions of our own and see, you know, how do they feel on certain
I'm going to defer to you, and I'll tell you why. Okay. Because I'm one of those voters, and I admit this, that there has to be a likability factor.
And to get elected or to govern?
I think there has to be a likability factor to get elected.
Right.
I think there's a wow factor that people look for. And even if that wow factor is not entertaining, which is one reason why I think Donald Trump is there, because he offers the entertainment, but there's got to be some likability factor. And I've looked like through the panel of the GOP, and I've said, let me find, you know, somebody that I feel like I can believe in. Somebody that I feel like is really saying something that I need to hear. Maybe it's not what I thought before, what I believed or my conviction, but offer me something new. I can't get beyond some of these personalities. Mm. Cruz is one of them.
Cruz is one of them? Cruz, what about his personality?
It's something about his personality that is inauthentic to me. It shows up inauthentic to me.
Okay.
And so it's hard for me to get a read there, and I just say, I don't know. I can't go with you. And then when I look at the inconsistencies of some of, you know, his dialogue, I look at, you know, there's been all this fact checking that's been going on. Mm-hmm. And you hear that, you know, he said one thing here, but then it wasn't really the truth.
Right.
I begin to say, okay, now that's why I don't like you. Is that why I don't like you?
Yeah.
I don't like you. So I'm going to defer to you.
I'm the type of person that tends to judge a presidential candidate on their policy positions and not whether or not
you like them or not.
They're entertained. Not even whether or not I like them, because I have never met any of these people, so I can't say with any authority if I like them or if I feel as though they're good or bad people. Mm-hmm. Given that criteria, the only criteria that I can judge their judgment or their temperament or whatever it is that, you know, we value in a president is by their policy positions and where they stand, their voting record. We have an ad here. Boom. There we go. So anyway, for me, policy-wise, it doesn't really seem like there's much of a difference in. I think maybe Rand Paul has a slightly different approach to some of this, like foreign policy, for example. Like most of them want to bomb more countries and occupy more nations and just have a heavier presence there. And there's arguments on both sides as to whether or not that's a good idea.
Right.
But I don't really see much different in the messaging. Like there's not much variety when it comes to a lot of this stuff. Like it feels like they're fighting but agreeing at the same time. They're fighting on the things that they agree on more. I don't know.
It's just, I think fundamentally, you know what their position is as a GOP party. But then right now the argument obviously is how you changed and how you didn't change and were you consistent here? Or did you do what I thought you should have done when you were governing or when you were leading or when you were, you know, a part of the Senate? And so that then muddies the water. So to me, it then leaves me with nothing but, okay, is this person likable? Like, I really wanted to see Rubio do so much better. I'm the polls have just, you know, pretty much, what I think he's, I don't know what his percentage is looking like now after last night, but he had not been doing as well as I thought he was going to do. Right. And then I began to look and listen, and I thought, I don't like him.
Okay.
And I probably shouldn't say that I don't like him, but I'm saying this. I don't like him as a presidential contender, but it's not up to me, right, America?
So he's not winning you over in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just watched Trump.
Did you?
Because Trump has won me over in terms of his charisma. He has a charisma. I think he's won a lot of Americans.
Charisma's not going to run the country, though.
I agree with you. And I think you're making my point. I like Trump because of charisma, but that's not going to run the country.
I think he's super entertaining, and I would love Donald Trump to get on our show. I mentioned the hashtag Trump on
BHL.
On BTP, which stands for Black Tea Party. Because I want to get him on the show because I have a lot of questions for him. But I just... Charisma for me doesn't really do it anymore. You know, we have seen in the past charismatic candidates that have reneged on their promises and have taken the country in directions that a lot of the people disagree with, or that isn't conducive to progress. One may argue, and so I'm really looking closely at their policy positions, and I just don't see a difference. Like, I don't really think the ideas that they have are diverse enough to have any one central idea emerge, like the best idea to emerge out.
Okay.
If that makes any
sense. It makes complete sense.
So for me, the GOP debate is just like more of the same. I don't know.
Let's throw it out there. Let's throw it out there right here on Black Tea Party. If Donald Trump was sitting here today, and if he watches this, maybe you're watching now, Donald, I don't know, but if you do, fix your hair, what would you ask him?
I would ask him how he plans on getting China to, how he plans on getting Mexico to pay for this wall.
This wall.
And will he do the same thing? Will he build another wall between the United States and Canada? Does making Mexico build the wall, if they refuse, like, how do you get them to do that? So if they refuse, do you mean more sanctions? Do you mean invading them? Like, what do you plan on doing to persuade that government to comply?
Wow.
That's one question.
But that question sounds loaded, though. Is that question loaded? Are you asking that question
I really want to know. Okay. Because he's been stern on it. I'm not saying I agree with that. Not saying I disagree with that. I'm just simply curious as to what he plans on doing to make that happen.
Right.
Same thing with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And I know you asked me about Donald Trump, but I'm just using Bernie Sanders as a comparison. And even Hillary Clinton. You know, Bernie Sanders says he wants to, the goal is to get education for all and healthcare for all. But how do you plan on doing that? Raising taxes. Okay. Where are you planning on raising taxes? What are you cutting? I want to know details. I want to know exactly how you plan on spending our money.
Do you think that's important to hear from a candidate at this stage?
Yes, absolutely.
At this stage?
Absolutely.
So then does it become an issue that you're not hearing it at this point? I mean, does it beg the question, is there really a plan, or is this just political rhetoric that's empty at the end of the day?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question too. I think if you are not hearing many concrete solutions, you don't really have like plans that have been mathematically worked out with experts in economics and foreign policy and domestic policy and those things. You know, it does become an issue because we're electing a new president this year, and I say, you know, the election is not too far off, but at the same time, you know, we have enough time for anything to happen. I think we should always be asking those types of questions from the moment someone announces their candidacy, because these are real issues that affect a lot of people, and people want to know the answers to those questions.
I think so. I agree with you. I think that's a great question. And Donald Trump, you have been invited to the Black Tea Party.
Do you have a Donald Trump question?
Yeah. You know what my question is? Because I listen a little bit differently. My question to Donald Trump would be, who has his ear?
Oh, who is he getting advice from?
Who does he listen to?
Yeah.
Because there's so much about his speech, the way he shows up politically, that rubs the wrong way to me, if I'm just going to be honest. And please. I wonder, a man of his caliber, sometimes you get so far gone, you're so much of the leader, you're so much of the person that's in charge, that sometimes you don't get a chance to be challenged because everyone around you is affirming you. Everybody's trying to get a paycheck, they're trying to get a job. And I'm wondering, has anyone said something to this man that says, you know, your mouth is your brand. Yes, you'll say what you want to say, but you need to filter some of this. Mm-hmm. Part of me is a little happy he has no filter because I think I can see who he is because he has no filter. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is a sense in which you need to be politically correct. I think there's some things that you would say about women that you should not say about women. Mm-hmm. That if you have said those things, you need to retract those things, or you need to at least put those things in a different context so we understand that you're not, you know, chauvinistic,
right?
That you're not a bigot, you know, with some of the things he's talked about, race, you know, racial implications and tensions there. Who has his ear? Who can he go to that would say, Donald, hold on, this is how this is reading, and this is not working? And so it's a matter
of articulation.
I think it's a matter of articulation, but I think it's a commitment to a style. I mean, this has happened so regularly and so consistently with Donald. I'm wondering, there's no one that can tell him, or everybody's just trying to get a check and ride the wave, catch the vapors.
I think it might be a little bit of both. I mean, Donald Trump doesn't strike me as someone who, Donald Trump strikes me as, and I don't know him personally, but he strikes me as someone who, when he strongly believes something, everything falls to the periphery and there is no stat or person with information or expert that can dissuade him from that, or at least provide a different perspective that would internalize in any way.
A great leadership quality, you think?
Or? I think a good leader hires people who are much smarter than him to tell him what to do.
Right.
Or her.
Or
what
her.
To do.
Exactly. Wow, interesting.
I mean, if I were the president, I'd be scared out of my pants because I don't know how to run a country. I would hire the like almost clinically insanely smart people on every single aspect of governance.
Yes.
Whatever, you know, foreign policy, you know, the environment, what have you.
Right.
To tell me what to do. If I have this power, I want to be able to make the best decision possible. And so I want to hire people that are much smarter than me to help me do that.
And I feel like I'm kind of joining in the whole media blitz in terms of following and talking about Donald Trump, but he's had such a great impact over the whole GOP debate and the whole political atmosphere.
Right.
This week, obviously, the GOP had the debate. Donald Trump was not going to be a part of that debate. Initially, he indicated that he was probably not going to attend because of Megyn Kelly.
Right.
Megyn Kelly, if you're not up to speed, you know, she moderated one of the earlier debates, and Donald Trump thought she was being very, very difficult with him, asking him all of the challenging questions. He did not want to go back into the arena with her on this, and so he didn't show up. And now he's actually saying that it wasn't Megyn Kelly as to why he did not show up, but it was actually Fox News. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't. So what about Fox News?
Fox News obviously had kind of joined this whole kind of tornado, if you will, of confusion, and put out a press release. This press release was a statement that was made by the head of Fox News, which indicated that it was a little salty. It was directed somewhat towards Donald. Well, you knew that, although they didn't have to call his name. So Donald Trump decided not to attend the debate because of his offense by Fox News.
Got it. Okay.
That's what he's saying now.
Right.
But before the press release came out, and I agree that press release was a little bit challenging. I mean, it was a little bit, I think, beyond the pale. Mm-hmm. But it was their way of just kind of protecting Megyn Kelly and the whole Fox brand as well. So they just joined in.
Megyn Kelly has one of the highest rated shows on
the
that network.
Good at what she does,
and,
right?
Yeah, she's good at what she does. She's good at hosting, and she's good at what she does. They don't want to risk, you know. They're definitely Team Kelly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Team Kelly. So now Donald Trump is saying, and I'm going somewhere with this, but Donald Trump is saying that he did not attend because of Fox News, not because of Megyn Kelly.
I mean, it's synonymous. They're synonymous. Fox News, Megyn Kelly.
But are they really? I mean, one of the taunts of Donald Trump has been, you can't face Megyn Kelly because you think she doesn't like you. You think she's going to ask you the difficult question or the, you know, the more challenging question. Right. You're going to have to talk about things you don't want to talk about. What are you going to do when you're sitting across the desk or you're meeting with one of these international, you know, personalities that that are dictators?
You can't just not show up to the meeting.
You can't just not show up. You can't just get up and walk out.
Right.
So it now has become, you've got to stand up for yourself. I stood up for myself with Fox, and not, I'm bothered by Megyn Kelly,
right,
and that made me leave. Because to me, that's a leadership quality that needs to be looked at carefully. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you, but that's assuming that you believe that Donald Trump is a suitable leader.
Well, yeah, I don't believe that Donald Trump, I can say that here, it's the Black Tea Party. I just don't have any Trump in my tea.
That's funny. Well, look, I don't know about you, but I'm starting to kind of think about these debates and think about them in the context of how even unnecessary they are, given the fact
you
that
think?
We can, yeah, I mean, come on, we can, I do enough research online. I don't even have a television. I have, well, in my roommate has a television, so we watch the debate in the living room, but if we didn't have one, it wouldn't make much of a difference in my life in terms of how I consume information and how much of that information is consumed.
Right.
So,
But I think it does give us an opportunity to really hear what these candidates are thinking and how they're responding and how they justify or explain where their inconsistency, so to speak. I'm like really into this.
I am too. You know, I'm into the process.
Even right now, I'm getting hot because I'm thinking about just all of the implications around.
I'm into the process too, but I think it also it comes from a bunch of different angles. So I think the media, the places that are holding, like the chat networks that are holding these debates, I think some of them need to ask better questions, and by better questions, I mean specific policy questions and not waste the time, the precious time that many of us have, that we've dedicated to watching TV, which, I mean, it's hard to do now because I can go on my phone and watch any of this stuff.
Right.
And really stay on topic and stay on message when it comes to policy and what they plan on doing, you know, policy-wise. But we can get into this and talk about all of this for a long time.
Absolutely.
So.
I am really hot in the studio. Are you hot? You have a sweater on. I do too, but
I'm good. I think you're just
I am passionate about it. Okay, so really, before we get off of this topic, what do you think about the whole ploy with Donald Trump doing his own campaign that night, kind of like a rivalry to the GOP debate, but then doing it and raising funds for the veterans?
I think anytime you raise funds for groups that need them, that's good. And
such a diplomat he is, my goodness.
Me?
Yeah, you. Not Donald, of course, you.
I think it's interesting because this is something that he's, you know, been talking about a lot, but, you know, has he been a vocal, you know, a vocal activist or
see, you got me working.
That's
up
the thing.
Now.
Like, I don't know if he's ever talked about this in the past. So
he hasn't talked.
Is
about
he using
the
this? Is he using this sort of as like a political move? I don't know.
It would appear he hasn't talked about the veterans.
And the funds don't go directly to the veterans, right? The funds go to his organization, and then it's funneled through his organization.
I'm not sure on the
I'm
way
pretty,
those funds were.
I'm pretty certain. I'm gonna look into this, and then we'll post it in the description box.
The
below.
Understanding. And I heard Huckabee do kind of like a post interview on this that said, you know, where he confirmed that the funds and the resources were going. And they did. They were successful. They raised over $6 million last night for veterans. But how is that going to be disseminated or filtered once it goes to his organization covering administrative costs? You know, maybe how much will they get? I don't know.
I think it's a good thing if he's going to look, veterans are getting shafted, right? They come back from these wars and they have crazy PTSD some of them come back limbless and just the tolls on many levels that are taken on them that they undertake as a result of these wars is completely disheartening.
So does it make a difference that he hasn't discussed veterans? I think there was even some argument about how he petitioned or had them removed from outside of his properties because he thought that they were kind of adversely affecting his marketability by hanging around there. And now, when he's not going to show up, this becomes the Trump card.
Yeah, it becomes, you know, it brings up the question of hypocrisy, or it brings up the question of sort of inconsistency in his narrative when it comes to the veterans, but ultimately, I think it's a good thing. If he's going to raise money for the veterans, I think it's good.
Right.
I hope that it's not just a political move and he continues to raise money for the veterans after he, after this whole political thing happens.
Absolutely. Over. Win, lose, or draw, right?
Win, lose, or draw. That's what I was going for.
So listen, so what's been on your heart? Because I know there's been a lot going on this week that's kind of lift your eyebrows, yeah?
Yeah, I went to CVS and I bought a bunch of mosquito repellent.
Did you really?
Well, I wanted to because... Have you heard about this Zika outbreak?
Yeah.
Happening. Zika. Correct us if we're butchering the name.
Zika, we don't like her. That's what we determined, right? Boy.
you practiced that.
I really did.
You totally practiced that.
Well, okay, I did.
So, no, it's good. In Brazil, there's this outbreak. Well, not just in Brazil. I believe here in Brazil, Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador, Colombia, Panama, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Mexico, and parts of the Caribbean. There's this outbreak of this virus called the Zika virus that basically is affecting... It's a virus that affects... pregnant woman in that it transfers to the baby, and these babies that are born in these countries are born with shrunken heads, like smaller heads, which leads to a lot of cognitive issues. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued a travel alert for 24 countries and territories where the virus is transmitting, where the virus transmission is ongoing. So it's pretty serious in that it's a few numbers away from being a pandemic, but it's certainly an epidemic, and I wanted to talk about that because I'm wondering, where did this come from? How did this happen, and why is it happening now? Because there's there's some talk about there was a genetically modified mosquito that was released in that area, which has become sort of an invasive species and is kind of contributing to this factor. And I guess a question that I have is, what do you think of, do you think that, I'm trying to articulate it in the best way possible, but in terms of science, do you think that, we're kind of meddling too much in the natural world? Or... And this isn't something that's been confirmed, but if it is true, it would have huge implications for the scientific community, I feel like.
I think you ask a very profound question. I definitely am a conspiracy theorist when it comes to health epidemics that seem to go on a rampage. And I think America's very interesting to me because I think as soon as it hits the American soil, we'll see a stop somewhere.
Right.
Because it's almost as if it's okay that these things begin, before they became an epidemic, it didn't just explode, but there was a trend, there was a pattern that was forming, but it was forming in other third world countries for the most part. And so there's not a lot of attention given to there because of maybe our Western civilization, the way we look at life when it's over there versus life when it's over here. Does that make sense? And I think that when we're coming to play with these things scientifically, we're all in the laboratory playing around. I think we're all in the laboratory playing around. And so we allow some things to happen. I often wonder if it's, population control.
That's a big conspiracy theory, though.
And it could be a big conspiracy theory, but just a couple of years ago, we hit 7 billion people, and all of a sudden, people start disappearing on planes, and people were disappearing on top of mountains, and now we've got mosquitoes that have a whole new virus because somebody's playing around in the lab.
Okay, let me give you some background information on this a little bit, because I just found, that's why there was a lot of ahs and ums, because I was looking for this article. Hold on. A little background information. This is from an article on the BBC that says that Zika was first detected in Uganda in 1947, but has never caused an outbreak on this scale. And Brazil reported the first cases of Zika in South America in May of last year, of 2015. Mm-hmm. And most cases result in no symptoms, and it's hard to test for, but World Health Organization officials said that between 500,000 and 1.5 million people had been infected in the country. Get this, the virus has since spread to more than 20 countries in the region, and there are a few cases of those in the United States. So we need to get our act together and figure this out.
We do. Because now it's not just the pregnant women. You know, some of these people that are in these states that have been detected have just traveled abroad and have been exposed to it, but not necessarily pregnant women.
Not necessarily, no. I mean, it's, and you mentioned something about abortions in that country being something that they're exploring, legalizing that or something like that?
Yeah, legalizing abortion so that women that are pregnant that are potentially infected with this could abort the child, which is obviously over here on American soil is a very touchy and sensitive conversation. But when you look at this kind of situation, circumstance, it's
And I think they're also
understandable.
I think there's also talk of having this idea of not having women get pregnant for a certain amount of time until they can get this under control, whatever that means or however that's going to happen. But
so you know, you laughed at me when I said population control, but you've just made two points that really support a concept of population control: not getting pregnant and allowing abortions. Just think about it. I'm just saying.
All right, Don. Well, by the way, there's no vaccine for that.
There's no vaccine.
There's no vaccine for it. So,
since 1940 something.
Yeah.
And how does that happen?
Well, it hasn't been discovered yet, Don.
I don't know.
Moving on.
Moving on. Yes.
I wanted to talk about something else that's happening. That's a kind of an environmental thing that we touched upon last week with our guest Amir. Porter Ranch is an area here in Southern California that's experiencing a methane gas leak. Apparently, it's as of last night at 8:30 p.m. I looked at the numbers. About 7 million metric tons of CO2 gas has been emitting from the earth in Porter Ranch, and this has actually been something that has been going on since the fall. And a lot of the media isn't really talking about it. I thought we should talk about it. Here are some numbers. So 7.5 million metric tons of CO2 has been released into the atmosphere. 844 million gallons of gasoline burned as of 8:30 p.m. on the 28th of this month of this year. So just a couple days ago, last night.
What's that number again?
844,431,280 gallons of gasoline burned. $13,919,035 worth of natural gas has been wasted as of January 28th, 2016 at 8:30 p.m. So why aren't more people talking about it? And who's responsible? It boggles my mind that with numbers like this, no one's talking about it.
You know, there hasn't been an epidemic of people really getting that sick yet. Well, and I say yet because I think that's almost inevitable.
Well, yeah, because we don't know the ongoing implications of this, but people have definitely been displaced in the area. No one can live there.
they've been displaced, which I think is a great movement.
Right. The people have done you shouldn't that. Be in an area with a lot of methane gas.
You should not be in an area with a lot of gas.
The governor of California issued a state of emergency over this. And you know, I just think it's something we should talk about. I think it's not something that I've seen on television. And you know, it's sad that, you know.
You know, the interesting thing, and I don't want to go back because I know the last week's show covered this at length, was the whole water thing in Flint. Mm-hmm. And now you kind of juxtaposition both of these next to one another. And I think, you know, that our governor here in California wants to do what the governor there didn't do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, how long did you know this? You know, and how, you know, were you going to advise people that this was going on so that they could be preemptive, remove themselves or make decisions for themselves? Or are we making decisions for people?
Apparently this happened. I mean, this has been going on for a few months. The methane gas has been erupting for a few months. And the state of emergency, I hope it's right what I'm about to say, but the state of emergency, I think, was only declared earlier this month. So there have been several weeks of methane gas being erupted into the atmosphere without any sort of mention of it or anything.
So. And that's the thing that troubles me the most about this, which is why I compared the Porter Ranch to the Flint, Michigan thing, because I think that in this whole political climate, we're talking about governing, we're talking about managing. Mm-hmm. What is going on where we have things that are potentially life-threatening, very life-threatening if you really look at it, depending on how much one has consumed, be it water and or gas, right?
Yeah.
How much is really going on? I mean, what's really going on that our government officials know about this for a period of time and expose people and their health, their children, the elderly, I mean, just people, period, expose them to this type of thing and not be aggressive and not take action soon enough.
Well, it's negligent government. I think the fact of the matter is, you know, this is happening under the government's watch, and this is something that,
right.
you know, the state government should be handling, and yeah. you know, there's that. But I just want to read off some numbers. About 3,700 households in and around Porter Ranch have temporarily moved out of their homes, and around 2,400 more are waiting relocation, and that's from an Al Jazeera article that was published on the 27th. So there's still a lot of people that are still living there and breathing in this gas and this, and you know, doing this. And so, you know, I think it's definitely something that it warrants a state of emergency. And I'm just surprised that
I think it does warrant a state of emergency. And if I were there, it's interestingly enough, because I was going to buy a home in Porter Ranch. I'm so glad I didn't at this point. But here's my thing. If it's a state of emergency for those people that are waiting to be relocated, how about you imply a moratorium over the mortgage companies where they can't file foreclosure and they can't evict people, and let them take their living expenses that they're pouring into the homes that they can't live in peacefully, right, with devoid of risk, and then relocate themselves. And then we'll deal with the reimbursement after the fact. Doesn't it seem important to get people out of the line of danger or fire?
Absolutely. And also talk about what the underlying, like the root cause of all this is. You know, you're drilling in places where you don't really know the terrain, and you don't know, you know, clearly this is something that, you know, couldn't have been foreseen in terms of once you're down there.
Yeah.
But this also comes to the question, you know, it also brings home the point that we shouldn't be dependent on drilling only because of environmental disasters like this. And so we need to find alternate ways to fuel our electricity and our power, because the people are always the ones to suffer in the end.
Yeah, they are, especially at the hands of negligent government.
Right. Which, I mean, is the problem.
That is the problem. I mean, and that's what this show is all about, dealing with the whole political dynamic and the process by which, I mean, I don't want to circle back around to the voting of the GOP, but it's
what's
why...
super important.
It's super important to pay attention to what your politicians are saying, what they're saying they're going to do for you, whether or not they have the characteristic to see that through, the execution in terms of their track record, so that when you vote and you check that box or you... you know, you do whatever you do to get that elected official in office, you can really trust the fact they're going to make decisions that are best for you. And I honestly think people should, if they knew about this gas leak months before and did nothing, and there was no state of emergency, I think we should be asking for some jobs.
Well, I do.
Well, and the reason why I say it is because I don't live too far away from Porter Ranch. So I don't know how much of that gas I done sniffed.
Well, that's a legitimate question, and there are some legitimate concerns. I mean, Los Angeles Times reported on December 25th that LA County health officials said prolonged exposure to trace chemicals, some of which are known carcinogens, can cause long-term health effects. And so,
and that's why I don't understand, Julian. Yeah. Why are people waiting to be relocated? If there's a state of emergency, there should be a moratorium of protection over those households that are affected by this gas leak. I'm saying it. I think that needs to be done.
Can they move? Maybe they're not. I mean, I don't know why they're not moving.
In order to be there, you've got to pay to be there.
Right.
I'm just very practical approach here. You've either got a mortgage or you've got rent to pay.
Right.
If there's a moratorium because there's a state of emergency here, then it should protect your home while you, in the interim, repurpose your resources to provide shelter for yourself and your family elsewhere where you're not subject to it.
Oh, well, that's something to talk to the governor about.
Perhaps. Governor, call me. We'll work this out.
Is there money to do that?
Is there money?
That's the question.
Well, I mean, people can utilize their own money. The only reason why I wouldn't move out of my home is because I possibly can't afford to pay for this home and pay for where I'm going to be, right?
Right.
But if there's a moratorium because it's a state of emergency that protects my home, then I can just redirect my resources to where I'm going to stay. And I won't even call out the brand of places you can stay where, you know, you can rent a place, a furnished place already, Airbnb or something.
Airbnb.
I don't know.
Shout out to Airbnb.
I've done it. Shout out.
There's also a number of lawsuits, obviously, as a result of this.
And, as there should be.
It's definitely a story that's not going to go away.
No.
I hope not, because it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, if you think about it, this is arguably one of the worst environmental disasters since the BP oil spill. Yeah. And it just, no one's talking
but
about it.
But you utter the word carcinogens. Yeah. And when you utter the word carcinogens, that's going to send up flare and worry for people. Can you imagine the number of people down the line that unfortunately will get that diagnosis mm-hmm. and can't help but say, I inhaled this. Mm-hmm. And I inhaled this at your expense. And those lawsuits will continue to unfold.
Oh my God, the world. What's this is why I gotta like vary up my media, because like if I'm just consumed with all of this, I get so depressed.
No, yeah, it is. It's. Well, I mean, we're talking about the hot issues yeah. right now. There's a lot of good stuff happening, right?
I mean, yeah, sure.
Sure. Can you help us talk about it? You heard here on the scene. We're stumped on the Tea Party. We're stumped.
Well,
on the tea
I
party.
Mean, it's something that we should look. There are a lot of legitimate issues that we need to attack, that we as a country and as a world need to address, and
right.
that's the reason why we have these conversations, is to bring on the best ideas. Some of them are wacky, some of them are wacky and good, some of them are wacky and bad, you know, right. but as long as we're bringing all of these ideas to the forefront and just putting them out there, I think the best ideas will win.
The best ideas will win. I'm with you on that.
I'm hoping that's...
You're keeping me sane, because I kind of get funny over some of this stuff, because...
Do
it's,
you?
What, when I say funny, meaning that I laugh to keep from crying,
right.
really, because some of this is so... sad to me. Mm-hmm. It's really, really sad that we put value on human life. We put it, and when I say we, I'm meaning our governing officials tends to put a value on human life. I don't for one believe that you would sit inside an office and you would read the report that says this much gas is leaking, or that you would sit inside the office and hear this much water is contaminated, here's the lead, you know, account in the water, and put it aside without having to make a decision mm-hmm. that this isn't worth my immediate attention. I don't believe that.
You don't believe that? You don't think perhaps...
You're elected by the people.
But you don't think perhaps once you're in office and you're kind of in that bubble, you know, you tend to sterilize, or there's a tendency to sterilize the decision-making process?
I think you're very right with that. Yeah. I think that the person that easily sterilizes to take part in the decision-making process is a person who is just politicking. Mm-hmm. I think that there are people who politic that they care less about people. You know, I think if we listen to our political climate right now, and we listen to those that are campaigning for the highest office in the land, you can listen and hear the ones that care about people versus the ones who care about politics.
Well, that's a fair point, for sure.
You know, and I think that, and I strain to listen, you know, through that lens, through that filter, if you will. Who cares about people? Because when there's a leak of whatever gas, and I want someone to care about people more than you care about whatever the next thing is on your item of agenda. Because these are the people that voted you here. And now we're talking about life.
You should run for president.
No, I shouldn't run for president. No, I shouldn't run, because they don't want me to run, because I'll tear this place up. No, but I really believe that people that care about people, you prioritize that. And here's the thing, which is kind of like for free, and it could be irritating, but it's difficult for me to hear you say that you're pro-life when it comes to a conversation about abortion, but not be pro-life when it comes to a conversation about bad water or gas in the air.
That's a fair point. I mean, that's a point that a lot of people agree with you on. I think there's a segment of the population that would echo those sentiments. So.
Yeah.
Well, we could. There's
go ahead,
so much.
Go ahead. I know you're in.
No, I mean, we have to wrap. But I think, you know, the bottom line is that we have to hold these people accountable, these government officials accountable, because they're effing up the place. And it's affecting people, right. And I mean, it's a multi-generational thing.
Yeah,
you know, children will be affected, and they're genetically, you know, being affected by that, and so, you know, their children will, and you know, it's only one planet. Blah blah blah. I hate to get all mushy and
no, but it is
woo-woo about it. But it's like we're all in this together, right?
So. Right, we're in this together.
Anyhow,
wow,
what a show.
It's been a show.
What a show.
Julian DeJarrick and Don Nash on Black Tea Party, and we're really stirring up some stuff here. Julian's looking at me like, oh, really? Are you serious? And I'm looking at him like, okay, you are so deep.
I'm not.
No, it's great conversation, though, man. I'm so happy that we could talk about these things.
Yeah.
And one day I'm going to ask you who you're voting for.
I won't talk about it publicly, but
I know you. I'll said one day, one day off camera.
All right.
There it is. So listen, thank you for joining us on the Black Tea Party. It's where you come. We talk about things that concern us, our people, our community. And we got different voices. And so I'm so happy to have Julian Dujeric as a part of the team.
Yeah.
We're missing Stacey Ike.
Stacey.
Yeah, we're missing Anthony Martin.
Anthony.
Black Fist activist. So shout out to you all. We won't be the same until y'all join this mix of tea we're brewing over here. See y'all next week. Catch me on Don Steady Dose Twitter. Julian.
At Julian Dujeric Twitter and Instagram.
Yep.
And you can see us here on YouTube and on iTunes. Make sure to check us out. See you next week and take care. Goodbye.
'Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff. We would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals. The following is a presentation of the